You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss.
Step by step along this march, can be won, can be won. Many stones can form an arch, singly done.
Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions and is sponsored by the Institute for Labor Studies at UMKC. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI, UMKC, or any of the unions involved. Tonight's show is being underwritten by Blake and Ulig and Firefighters Local 42. Blake and Ulig, PA, advocates for labor for over 40 years, proudly representing organized labor and its members throughout Missouri and Kansas. And the show is brought to you by the Greater Kansas City Firefighters, IAFF Local 42 of Kansas City, Missouri, representing fire, EMS, and public safety professionals in Greater Kansas City since 1918. We thank our underwriters for their support to the Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI. Last week, AT&T reported massive profits, but 17,000 workers in the Midwest, who helped make them rich, are working without a contract and facing demands for slashed health care, pensions, and job security protections. We'll find out about that struggle tonight on the show, and then we're going to ask, why are home care workers demonstrating against the whole person? And why do they want a union? All that tonight. In the news, union stops work to protest police brutality, and ultra-right unseated in Alberta, home of the tar sands. Our feature at the end of the show is Safety First with Mary Ario. And now for the news.
This is the news from our side, May 7, 2015. This week, elections were held in the Canadian province of Alberta, and the results were unexpected good news for working families and their allies. Winning the elections were the New Democratic Party, which describes itself as social democratic and is an outgrowth of past Canadian populist parties such as the Canadian Labour Party and the United Farmers of Alberta. Leading the New Democratic Party is longtime labor lawyer Rachel Notley. Notley has been a labor relations officer for the United Nurses of Alberta, a legal representative for workmen's compensation cases, and a Medicare expansion activist. Longtime observers of Canadian politics were stunned by the NDP victory. Many voters considered a vote for the NDP to be a protest vote against the status quo, but they were not quite sure what the NDP would provide if they came into office. Followers of politics in the United States are likely unsurprised that one of the first things conservatives claimed after the NDP victory was that it will cause businesses to leave Alberta. Notley reassured her new constituents this was not in any way her intention, even going so far as to suggest that she would consider the construction of additional oil and gas pipelines as energy is Alberta's primary economic sector. One thing the Albertans can certainly expect from their new government is a dramatic increase in social spending. Notley has promoted vastly expanded after-school programs, apprenticeship training, and other social programs that give struggling youth in Alberta meaningful activities to engage in and increased optimism about their futures. The NDP joins a growing list of parties around the globe that are winning elections with the promise of building a more inclusive and just economy. In Spain, a new left-wing populist party known as Podemos has signed up 350,000 citizens, making it the second largest party in the country. In Greece, Syriza controls 149 of the 300 seats in parliament. Syriza started out as a coalition of smaller progressive activist groups. And in 2015, their leader, Alexis Tsipras, attained Greece's highest political office. Recently, Notley sat down in an interview with a Canadian journalist. It's been popular to depict Alberta as this sort of right-wing place off in the West, she said. But that's not what it is. There's a lot of different issues on which Albertans articulate as progressive an approach as what you might see in downtown Toronto. Perhaps this outcome will provide some optimism for white right-wing places off in the West, in the country to the south of Canada as well.
Last Thursday, the International Longshore and Warehouse Union Locker No. 10, based in Northern California, led a shutdown of the Oakland port. They called for a work stoppage in order to protest police brutality. I put forth the resolution to shut down the port because I am proud of my union's story of resistance, and I feel it was time for labor to come out loudly against police terror, said Stacy Rogers of the ILWU, who initiated the port action. We are in a historical moment in our country. Labor has always been a part of historical moments in this country, and we continue that legacy on May Day. Maritime employers initially refused to grant the union stop work meeting on May 1st to protest the racist police killing. Longshore workers defied the employers and an organized march and rally with the black community anyway. A week later, employers agreed. Demonstrators began at 9 a.m. at the port. Following a short program, protesters marched to the city hall. Labor is one sector of the community that can truly shut down this community, country. Kat Brooks of Onyx Anti-Police Terror Project. If workers refuse to work, product doesn't get made and money doesn't exchange hands. The only way this country is going to take us seriously is if we interrupt their commerce and impact their bottom line. Simply appealing to their humanity doesn't work. Representatives of the ILWU Local 10 decided to take action in part because of the history of their union's activism against oppression. In 1984, workers from Local 10 shut the port down for 10 days to protest against doing business with apartheid South Africa. 50 years before that, unionized workers in the Bay Area led one of the biggest general strikes in U.S. labor history, shutting down San Francisco for 3 days. In 99, the ILWU shut down every West Coast port to protest the World Trade Association meeting in Seattle. The Oakland port was also shut down for 3 days in 2011 in solidarity with Wisconsin workers under attack from Scott Walker. Jay Heyman, a retired member of Local 10, published a letter stating, "Now is the time for Local 10 to take the lead, just as we've always done. Across the country, unions have fought to make Martin Luther King Day an official holiday. We can do our part by marching and protesting the police killings and to show the coast who's got the power. That will send a message louder and clearer that the PMA bosses can understand."
On Wednesday, state government employees gathered in Jeff City to protest low wages. They threw symbolic pay raise vouchers into a trash can to protest the fact that the Missouri legislature passed a budget that includes no raises for state workers. The American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees said while Missouri ranks 50th in terms of state government worker pay, Missouri has the 34th most expensive state cost of living. Some of the protesters gathered at the event and talked about how their low pay affects them, claiming they never know when they will need to take out a payday loan just to keep paying the bills. One worker, Wendy Battaglia, who is a nursing assistant at a veterans home, claimed she has received a total raise of $1.10 in the past 7 years. Missouri pays its employees an average of around $40,000 a year, which is about $2,300 less than state employees earn in neighboring states. According to a May 6 editorial in the Kansas City Star, Missouri state revenue is 7% higher in the first 10 months of the 2015 fiscal year compared with the same time period in 2014. Missouri employees see this as a window of opportunity to try to obtain higher wages. Starting in 2016, the Missouri legislature will be implementing tax cuts on the rich that will surely drain the state's coffers and make it more difficult for workers to see an increase in earnings that might put them on par with workers in neighboring states. According to a 2013 Pew report, the average state employee in Illinois makes $25,000 more per year than in Missouri. The highest paid state workers are in California and New Jersey, where the cost of living is higher than in Missouri, but the average worker makes almost $70,000 per year. The news tonight was read by Molly Madden, Sarah Harrius, and I'm Jen Zaman.
The boss comes up to me with a $5 bill, says, get you some whiskey, boy, and drink your fill.
Get thee behind me, Satan, travel on down the line. I'm a union man, gonna leave you behind.
Red-headed woman took me out to dine and said, love me, baby, leave your union behind.
Get thee behind me, Satan, travel on down the line.
Well, that was one heck of a song. When I saw that, I immediately thought of Randall Stephenson, who is someone we'll be talking about tonight, or some of his actions. This evening, I have two very special friends of mine, and they are my brother and sister CWA members. They're from 6450, and that's President Billy Moffitt and Executive Vice President Sarah Harrius, who is also the mobilization queen for District 6. So they're having some problems right now. They're working without a contract. Billy, can you tell me how that happened?
Yeah, first of all, I would like to thank Heartland Labor Forum for having us this evening. I appreciate it. Basically, what we're looking at right now since April 13th is AT&T nationwide as well as Midwest. We have two contracts, Legacy AT&T, which has about 4,000 employees, and AT&T Midwest, who has about 13,500 employees. We have been working without a contract since the 13th of April. Some of the things we're stuck on is they feel we should pay more in benefits, as much as a 260% increase, which, you know, this is after our CEO, Randall, or we like to call him Randall the Rat, mentioned at our stockholders meeting that AT&T had one of the best first quarters ever, netting somewhere around $36 billion in the first quarter of this year.
When you say that it'll be like 260-something percent more, what kind of money are you talking about?
Well, I know for like a family right now, we are paying almost $200 a month in benefits. So, and that was currently under our current contract. So, you know, you multiply that by 260% and you'd be, yeah, you're going to have at least probably one paycheck.
I was going to say that's more than a paycheck.
Yeah, exactly. Going towards your benefits.
Oh my gosh, just when I thought he couldn't get worse. The is that the only thing that you cannot come to agreement on with that contract?
Well, I know that's one of the stalemates. I know another is job security. You know, in recent contracts, we had a job offer guarantee. Like, say, for example, they shut down one of our call centers. Our people would have the opportunity to follow their work to another office somewhere else in the United States. Like, I'll give you an example. There was a call center that closed in Fairhaven last year, and I had one member that actually transferred here to Kansas City from Fairhaven because she followed her career and followed her work, which was one of the clauses in our contract, which allowed her to do that.
As we've had the same contract, too, pretty close, that we could follow the work, except when they decide to want to play a game and not let you follow the work. But
yeah, and I know one other thing about the job security I will mention is we also had what we call a watermark where they couldn't lay off more than a certain amount of people in the three-year contract. And the company actually wants to do away with that, which that would be, you know, that would be a very bad idea. I can give you an example. I started with this company back in 94, and just our local here in Kansas City, we had over 3,000 people. Currently, as of today, I have approximately 415. So that just gives you an idea of how many people have been outsourced or work that has just been discontinued and moved to other parts of the world, you know, not the United States.
I know you're right. I was very shocked when I saw that they could take testing jobs and move them to Europe. What frustrated me was when they said it was because they had national health care. It just never stops. Well, tell me, how are your people holding up?
Well, I'll tell you what, I know everybody was ready to walk. I can tell you on the 13th of April, everybody was pumped up, ready to go out on strike because, you know, this is something that's going to impact us for the rest of our life. I know I'll be 40 this year. I know I don't plan on retiring anytime soon. And, you know, several of my members feel the same way. They want something, you know, they don't want to be hurt financially. This is a company that's doing really well, you know, and, you know, to top it off, they just recently announced all of their top CEOs and vice presidents all got pay raises, you know, and that, I feel like that's off the back of us. You know, we got bought in 2006, you know, just to kind of give you a background of what Legacy AT&T is. We're what they call AT&T Long Lines. We were bought by SBC, Southwestern Bell. And then, of course, Southwestern Bell ended up changing their name to AT&T because it was more known worldwide.
Right. It was a smart business move.
Right, right. So that was done. We were kind of, I would say, more or less the stepchild. We've been through two contracts since that happened, and we took a lot of retrogressive demands and increases in our benefits and decrease. You know, we really didn't get much of a pay increase over these last two contracts. Mm-hmm. So we feel like we've taken or we've given a lot back the last two contracts. You know, when does this stop? You know, when do we stop taking give backs or take backs and you know, start giving us what our people deserve?
Well, and start building from what you've got left.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you have given back, and that's what these businesses have just been take and take and take until there's a line drawn in the sand, which obviously has happened now. So since you're working without a contract, what changes, what doesn't change?
Well, we work under the rules of the previous contract, but I mean, it's anything but normal. You know, I'll give you one example. I know recently in Toledo, Ohio, just within the last couple of days, we had a technician leave a tool behind at a customer's house. AT&T was going to suspend him for 2 days just because he forgot a tool. Well, the local in Toledo, they all went on a grievance strike. They all walked out in support of their brother with this local in Toledo. And that's obviously not something we can do when we're under a regular contract with grievance rights. You know, we do lose arbitration. So if any of our members get terminated and the cases go to arbitration is put on hold, or we do not have arbitration while we're working without a contract.
Do you still have your health care?
We do still have our health care. We're still paying, you know, the same amount we were paying the day it expired. So, yeah, that would
continue. So far, so good.
Correct, correct. I know the company pays it at the start of the month, so I guess, you know, if we were to go on strike, or the company or the CWA makes a decision, communication workers, to go on strike, more than likely they would cancel our health care after we were on the picket line.
Oh, I remember those days. Mm-hmm. And I remember too how you support the members who have serious illnesses, where everybody chips in to help them pay their health insurance, and there's a fund. That's a fund with the district, mm-hmm, to handle that. And I think that's one of the things that people need to know, is that they just have to hang tight and don't be afraid, because we are a family, and that we take care of our people. We take care of our brothers and sisters. And our other union brothers and sisters, too, from other crafts. So I've seen people who made bad decisions when there was a strike. Mm-hmm. And the thing, too, is they didn't realize that they'd have to pay it all back when they got back to work.
Well, I know. I think another thing AT&T's actually forgot is what the A stands for in AT&T. It's American. And, you know, sending all these call center jobs overseas, I don't know how many times a day my people tell me they talk to customers, like, upset because they're having to deal with somebody in another country who has no idea. You know, obviously there's a language barrier. They're reading off a script, so they have really no idea what the real concerns or issues are. They reach somebody in my call center. You know, here we actually have a call center in Lee's Summit with about 400 people in it. And, you know, they're blown away by how good the customer service is, how well they're treated, their issues resolved. They don't have to call back. You don't get that overseas. I know one thing in the news lately is AT&T actually got fined by the FCC recently, $25 million, because they were outsourcing work to Colombia, Mexico, and the Philippines. And these reps in these centers were selling Social Security numbers. So customers, you know, so they could get cell phones unlocked. And the FCC actually put a fine on AT&T for what I understand was one of the largest fines ever handed down by the FCC to a telecommunications company. You don't hear about that kind of stuff in a union call center, in a call center here in America. You know, because our people, we do care about our jobs. We work hard, and I also think we deserve to be paid well and taken care of as far as benefits go.
Well, there's no question about it. I think one of the biggest problems is that Randall Stephenson has made his promise to Wall Street that he's going to keep that return at, what, 5%? Not go below 5%. And when asked how he was going to do that, he said, well, cuts. So I wasn't sure if he meant people or maybe he's talking about more give backs for.
And I know, Hester, you and I talked earlier. I started with this company when I was 18. And, you know, when I started, this was a company that everybody loved. You know, it, you know, my, I remember I was about to go in the Marine Corps. I was a week away. And my parents are like, you got to go work for AT&T. That's one of the best companies out there. So I took this job. I actually have 21 years the end of this month. And, you know, now I don't see an end of when I can retire. I'll be 48 years old when I have 30 years of service, but I don't see myself retiring then because obviously I don't know what my future would hold as far as benefits go. I won't have any true pension because they want to take away my pension. And, you know, just what I put into my 401k is not going to be enough to live on until I can, you know, get Medicare eligible.
No, you're absolutely right. And it used to be, too, that you knew you could stay there. And as my boss used to say, keep your nose clean, stay out of trouble, and you'll have a job. Can't guarantee what it'll be, but you'll have one. And, boy, he died not knowing that that really was changing. And our people are good people. They're well-trained. They're just plain honest, good people. So good employees deserve to be rewarded, especially because you've made AT&T great. And bring in and continue to bring in the money for them.
And, you know, and I think our products that we have are superior. I think, you know, AT&T services are great. I mean, most all of our services, customers love them. You know, we may charge a little more than some of our competitors, but you get what you pay for.
I'm not really sure. You say, I know that it's a call center out in Lee Summit. Mm-hmm. But which calls do they take?
We primarily now handle what's called AT&T U-verse, which a lot of people in Kansas City actually have. Mm-hmm. It's cable, internet, voice over IP telephone, and that's primarily what we handle.
Is that being handled in any other place in the country?
It's such a big product now. It's one of AT&T's, I think it's the second biggest product next to mobility. There's actually several call centers throughout the United States and, unfortunately, outside of the United States.
You tell me that you're back at the bargaining table.
Yes, ma'am.
And are you hearing good news?
Well, they just went back to the table yesterday. I know our CWA chair, Billy Bates, who is our vice president of our contract that we're under, or our bargaining unit, I guess would be the proper word to use there. He actually pulled the bargaining team away and told AT&T, you know, call us when you get some serious proposals. Because what they were passing, everything was retrogressive. Everything was a minimal pay increase, which would no way cover a 260% increase in our benefits. So I guess earlier this week, AT&T did call and said, well, you want to go back to the table? We have some serious proposals.
I'm so glad.
So we hope, you know, our fingers are crossed that we will start to see some positive movement, you know, something that we can vote to ratify that our members will appreciate.
Because we were pretty concerned a few years ago and just really thought we were going to go on strike. And that's hard. It is really hard on families. It's hard on our customers because they're dealing with our managers. Yeah. It's just not a good deal. And we want to take care of our customers.
Which is what's important about the mobilization and the continuous of mobilization that we do. I mean, I think that that's important. We keep people working and earning a paycheck while still doing concerted activities within the work center, in the call center, and on the streets, which is what we did on May 1st with our informational rally. So I think it's important to continue to mobilize. I mean, that's what's kept AT&T off of strike for the last 30-something years. You know, it just keeps us a paycheck, and that's what we need to remember, you know, in the community as well as in our memberships.
I know sometimes it's hard to keep our members' spirits up. They're afraid. And what kind of mobilization tactics have you used? I know there are some that you do just as a presence, whether it be standing up at the top of the hour or what keeps your people going?
I know Sarah's actually been incredibly good at this activity. I know we have a blowhorn that we will blow in the call center and everybody starts shaking pill bottles with little like beans in them, you know, pill bottles signifying benefits or health care. And, you know, I'll kind of let Sarah talk about some of the stuff that she's done because like we talked about at the beginning, she's actually the district mobilization coordinator. So she has Missouri, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas. All of those are included in who she talks to as far as what she gets them to do.
Sarah, these are some of my favorite activities, so let me know what you do.
Yes, absolutely. Well, our most recent one that was reported on is that AT&T, for every sale that we get in our call center, we get a balloon. So at most times we have people or representatives there that are sitting there with 10 or 15 balloons at their desk at one time. And in a call center, when you have everybody sitting there, 10 or 15 balloons, it can kind of get... It just is not productive. Managers, I think their point is they can look outside and see who's getting sales or who's not. So we did release all of the balloons at the call center. Those went up to the ceiling. That was our boycott of the balloons. So that was a big one. You know, the noise making is a big one. Whenever we can all make noise in unity, you know, it definitely signifies solidarity. We've done a few rallies. Like Billy said, I am the mobilization coordinator for the District 6, so I have traveled, and we've done several mobilization training classes that have just kept everyone in our group educated and focused on what the mobilization does. So there are members in mobilization areas that are doing spontaneous things nationwide as far as your grievance strikes and things like that. So we are still kicking up the mobilization, and we have plans for much more if we don't get a contract very soon.
Have there been any informational pickets? That's one of my favorite things to do, too.
Well, I know we actually hosted one in Lee Summit last Friday, May 1st, right in front of the call center, and we probably had anywhere between 125 and 150 people show up. So I felt like it was a very successful event. We had a lot of people driving by honking or giving us thumbs up. We did have some handbills we handed out that talked about the A for AT&T being American and the issue with the call center, the calls being routed out to other centers in the lawsuit we just talked about.
How long do you think this is going to drag on?
Well, I know... since I've been around a while, I've seen a few of these. You know, knock on wood, I've never been through an actual strike. So I thank my previous CWA presidents and bargaining team for that. So, you know, the last one I think actually went into June. So I hope not. I hope it doesn't happen go that long. But you know what? We're willing to go until we get something, because obviously whatever we come up with contractually has to be voted and ratified by the membership. So even if they come to an agreement, our members still have to vote on what's agreed upon.
Can you think of any way that any of our listeners can be supportive? I mean, right now you're working, you've got your checks, and everything's good. And I hope it stays like that, because we don't want to have to go to a strike. But if it happens, it happens. You know, we deal with that too.
You know, I think maybe the message they give is when they call in, ask to speak to an American worker, ask to talk to somebody in the United States, because, you know, 9 times out of 10, you know, I hate to say it's that much, but they may reach somebody in another center or another country. And I think, you know, you get back into the United States, you're going to be in an office like we talked about that's a union office. We know what we're doing. We appreciate our job. We like our job, and we will take good care of them.
How about you, sir? Do you have anything to add?
I think that's very true. It just keeping the community aware of, you know, the AT&T is outsourcing, and just to make sure that we're, you know, here in America and that we're appreciated in the work that we do as union members.
Well, and I think we have to support AT&T workers, because our numbers have diminished unbelievably. And yet, even with that, we just keep plug it on and doing what we need to do to take care of people. Mm-hmm. And that's the way they trained us. They got the right people to do the job so that they could be trained. So I just hope that everything continues the way it is. And if not, the Heartland Labor Forum will certainly support you, and we'll be out there and we'll do everything that we can. How many people did you say this is affecting in the whole country?
There's approximately 17,500 nationwide.
It's a lot of people.
Yes, it is. Definitely.
A lot of people. So I want to just say thank you very much to President Billy Moffitt and to Executive Vice President Sarah Harrius. And this is Hester Dusick. They're from 6450. I'm from 6360. And we get together quite often, and we will stand shoulder to shoulder with you, whatever happens, celebration or something else. So
we appreciate it.
Thank you, Hester, Judy, Heartland Labor Forum, and Solidarity.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Seeds of Hope Found in the Ashes of Baltimore's Eruption.
A new book chronicles a growing consensus for justice system reform.
Will Sanders' run for the White House helped build a national progressive movement beyond the 2016 campaign.
All that and the week's underreported news on Between the Lines, Friday at 9 a.m.
Gerald Trimble, viola da gamba. Surtur Tunkton, percussion. Benjamin Warner, seven-string guitar. And Michael Turnbow, five-string violin, on the Local Showcase, Thursday at 8 p.m. Khadija and the White Guy discuss Sunday morning segregation, Thursday evening at 7.
Parker and Company with We've All Got Something. What a nice voice. This is Judy Ansel. Home care. When people are recuperating from a serious illness or injury, or as people age and are less able to do for themselves, most of them say that the last place they want to be is a nursing home. They'd much prefer to stay at home, but often they need some help to be able to do that. Someone to cook or help them bathe or do the housework or shop. That's why we need home care workers. Home care workers may be family, or they may be a growing number of hardworking and caring individuals whose career is to take care of the rest of us when we're sick or aging. Their numbers are staggering. There are over 10,000 of them just in Missouri. They're workers, and they deserve to be treated as such, not as maids or servants. And that's why, in many states across the country, including Missouri and Kansas, they're unionizing. With us to talk about their efforts to organize and to overcome many obstacles that have been put in their way by for-profit and nonprofit agencies, which send them out to people's homes, and, it appears, by the governor himself, are John Nelson, a lead organizer with Missouri Home Care Union and with SEIU Healthcare. Welcome to the show, John.
Thanks.
And on the phone, Julia May, a home care worker who lives and works in St. Joseph, Missouri. Welcome to the show, Julia.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for being on. My first question is for you, Julia, because I want our listeners to get a picture of the life and work of a home care worker. Can you tell us about yourself? You know, start with how long you've been doing this kind of work.
I've been doing it now for 6 years, and actually a little bit longer than that because I took care of my mother. So actually since 2000,
okay,
I've been doing this type of work.
Uh-huh. And who are your clients? You mentioned your mother, but are there others?
Yeah, I have other clients. We call them consumers, but clients.
Sorry.
I have two of them that I work for at this point in time.
Uh-huh. Okay, how many have you had all together in those 6 years? Or even more,
four, I guess. Probably about seven or eight.
Uh-huh. Okay. And tell us about them. What were their needs? What did you have to do for them?
I wash dishes and I do laundry, dusting, you know, cleaning their home, vacuuming. I go grocery shopping for them, you know, give them baths if they need, you know, help with taking a bath. I am a licensed CNA, so I help, you know, give them baths and stuff like that. You know, prepare their meals for them because some of them have disabilities that they can no longer do the do certain things in their home. So with, you know, an attendant in the home, and they direct us and tell us what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. How many clients would you, or consumers, I'm sorry, would you have at one time?
Several years ago, I was only getting paid like $8 an hour. So I had to work maybe five or six consumers, clients, in order to be able just to pay my bills.
Wow. So was that
because,
like...
Yeah, because we were, you know, the pay scale is so low, and they don't want to give us, they would give us raises up to $8.50 an hour, and that would be it for most of us. And then some of our attendants are still getting paid $7.75 an hour.
Oh, really?
Or okay. $7.45 an hour.
Okay. And so... Is this like a 6 or 7 day a week job? How many hours?
It depends on what the state authorizes for the consumers to get. And one of my consumers has 4 hours and 15 minutes, and the other one has 3 hours and 15 minutes. So, you know, they'll give you certain, you know, you just get a certain amount of time to do the work that needs to be done for these people and then get out of the home.
Wow. And I can imagine that that's tricky because you're in the middle of doing something, or, you know, they're in the bathroom or something like that. So I bet you end up donating a bunch of time. Is that true?
Yes, we do. We actually do. And then and some of us, you know, we go above and beyond what we need to do, because one of my consumers, she needed to get moved into another place, and I helped her get moved.
Okay.
And, you know, she thanks me constantly because she didn't have family members to help her get moved.
Uh-huh.
I helped her get moved, yeah. We donate a lot of extra time to them, and we don't get paid for it, but you know, anything to help, you know, someone who needs it.
Well, that's great. So how much do you get paid, and do you get any benefits?
Right now I'm getting paid. I actually got a raise thanks to the union, and I'm making $9.80 an hour now.
Uh-huh.
And no, we don't get any benefits.
No health insurance?
No health insurance, no.
Wow.
No.
Do you get any sick days or anything like that? Holidays?
No sick days.
You take care of the sick, but you don't get any help that way. All right. So I can imagine, but tell us why you joined the union.
To have better working conditions and to give our consumers the time that they need. You know, it also benefits the consumers, you know, with getting them the help that they need and the time that they need, you know, because sometimes 3 hours and 4 hours is not enough. You know, if you're a working mother, working mothers know it takes a little bit longer sometimes to do laundry, you know, or change a bed. You know, sometimes it might take you 30 minutes just to get the bed changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And then if you have a consumer that is bedridden, so you have a lot of time that you put into, you know, helping these people.
Right. Yes, I'm sure that's true. Well, thanks.
Yeah. You know, and then, you know, you got to, you know, sweep and mop and wash dishes and cook a meal, you know, that takes quite a lot of time.
I bet it does.
Everyone can't cook a meal or doesn't want a meal done in 30 minutes or less. You know what I'm saying? You know, they want a nice, good, proper home-cooked meal.
Well, it sounds like people would be lucky to have you too, Julia. I want to switch to John Nelson, who's the union organizer. And John, can you sort of give us the big picture? Tell us who the players are in this whole home care fight. You know, start with, what's the Missouri Quality Home Care Council?
Sure. So the Missouri Quality Home Care Council was formed after a ballot initiative happened in 2008. Essentially, it's a council that helps to promote and regulate home care in the state of Missouri.
So Missouri voters set this thing up through a ballot initiative.
Yeah, absolutely. Overwhelmingly, about 85% of the voters in the state voted for it.
Okay, okay. And so what do they do then, the Missouri Quality Home Care Council?
So they then in turn advise the governor about how to regulate in sort of all matters home care in Missouri.
Okay. So and what role does the governor have?
So he obviously he takes the recommendations from the council, then he oversees the program, right? So we're talking about Medicaid dollars that are flowing through the state to these programs, or this program in particular. And so, you know, he right now has the authority to pass through this contract that we've negotiated with the state administratively.
And doesn't he appoint the people to the Quality Home Care Council too?
Absolutely. So yeah. The council consists of consumers as well as some industry folks, such as a director for, say, a Center for Independent Living, mm-hmm. as well as people from his administration.
Okay. Okay. So this home care council then is empowered to negotiate with the union. And one of the things that initiative did, as far as I understand it, is it gave home care workers the ability to form a union and then negotiate, not with their direct employers, because it's unclear who those are, but with this home care council, right?
Yeah, that's right. So the Consumer Directed Services Program means that the consumer is actually the employer of the attendants. They have the power to hire and fire who they want to take care of them.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, because if you got somebody you don't like, you want to get rid of them and get somebody
right, not
else,
everybody
right?
has Julia, right?
Yeah.
But that being said, that's really where the power ends, right? So the vendors then, in turn, have the power to set the wages, talk about, you know,
like, give us an example of a vendor. Who's a vendor?
So a vendor would be like the whole person right down the street from us.
Okay. So are they all a whole person's nonprofit? It's a disability rights organization. Are they all like that?
No. So there are for-profit agencies as well as nonprofit centers for independent living.
Okay. So they get the Medicare dollars, and then they pay the home care workers. But do they hire the home care workers?
No, so that's, like I said, so the hiring and firing is all still with the consumers in the CDS program. So they basically act as a pass-through with these Medicaid dollars that are handed down from the state. They, in turn, take a cut out of it to administer the program and then, you know, pay, on average, about $8.50.
Okay, on average, about $8.50. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then my next question is, somebody told me that they get, what is it, $15.56 an hour?
Yeah.
For each home care hour that is spent, and they're paying them $8.50?
That's right. So for every hour, say, Julia works, the state pays $15.56. Out of that, then the whole person or entities like that would take a cut to administer the program and then, in turn, pay the workers whatever they deem is the
Is this negotiable?
Level. So it's all over the place, right? So it's arbitrary how they set the rates throughout the state. You could be living in the boot heel, which is a little bit more economically depressed, yet starting out at $9 an hour, whereas here or St. Louis, they've still got folks starting at minimum wage.
Okay. Okay, so now you all, it took you a long time, but you all did negotiate a contract with the Missouri Quality Home Care Council, right? What did you win in that contract?
Sure, yeah, it has been a long time. So our first initial election was back in 2009. So it has been a long process, but the contract's pretty exciting. So we actually were able to win a new wage scale that starts every home care provider at a base level of $8.50 per hour, up to $10.15, but it's totally at the behest of the consumer, meaning that the consumer has the right to raise their attendant's pay up to $10.15 without any sort of interference from the vendors, like the whole person.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so the vendor still gets $15.56.
Yeah, that doesn't change. It just means that more of that money is going to be going to the folks that actually do the work on the front end.
And so nobody's regulating what the vendor does with that money?
That's right.
That extra money?
That's correct. So once they take their cut, they can decide what they'd like to do with it.
Hmm.
Yeah, and so we also won a few other things in the contract, such as a holiday provision. So now attendants will be receiving an extra $3 per hour for every holiday they work, because we know that people don't stop being sick on Christmas and Thanksgiving, as well as things like a grievance procedure. and a task list to let them know exactly what it is they're supposed to be doing in the home.
Any healthcare benefits?
No healthcare benefits.
Okay. So these are healthcare providers who have no healthcare benefits.
That's right.
I bet that's on your agenda for the next contract, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we're always working on Medicaid expansion as well, because we know that most of the folks that work in the CDS program make too much money to qualify for services, but not near enough to go out and buy their own insurance off the private market.
Right. So, yeah, the ironies of this are, you know, like overwhelming me, but anyway. So has this contract you negotiated been implemented?
No, it hasn't. So,
and why is that?
I think that the big money in the home care industry has really sort of influenced the debate and the conversation. And so right now, the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules is having hearings on this particular implementation. But as of right now, I mean, we're right here at the end of the session and no clear end in sight.
You're looking for help from the legislature? Or I thought Governor Nixon shoved something off in the legislature, which he really didn't have to. Is that correct?
That's right. That's what I'm talking about with the Joint Committee.
Okay. All right. So on April 15th, a large crowd of us, I was there, of low-wage workers, including home care workers, fast food workers, adjunct professors, and their allies, marched on the offices of the Whole Person. I won't even mention the hostile police that were out on the street. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, but pretty intimidating.
Yeah, you were there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Obviously, Whole Person is not with the program. What have or haven't they done?
Yeah, I mean, I think, they've been sort of a dedicated roadblock in workers and consumers seeing the changes they want to see in this program from day one. But really...
Is it because they're anti-union?
Yeah, I think so. But, I mean, in the, most recently, we have a signed agreement by both our side and the state, right? Mm-hmm. But yet they refused to implement the contract. And really, that's what that was about. So they had been sent notice to comply and implement the contract. And, of course, they refused to do so.
So can you sue them? What's the next step?
Well, I think the next step is to ask the governor, right, that we feel like he has the power to push this contract through administratively. So we know, like I said, that we have a signed agreement both on our side and the state side. Why can't the governor take care of this?
Good question. And I see you're going to go try to visit him and ask him that question, right? You want to talk about that?
Sure, absolutely. So coming up on May 20th, we're going to have a day of action in Jefferson City to sort of remind those folks there that sort of hold the power of what home care workers do and why this is so important to the long-term care policy here in Missouri. So anybody that's interested in participating can either get a hold of us via Facebook on the Missouri Home Care Union page or can call us at 785-214-0068.
785-214-0068. We'll put that on our webpage.
Great.
Great. And, I have a friend out there who got laid off from another job, good union person. Called me the other day because she was working for one of these home care agents, what do you call them?
The vendors.
Vendors, mm-hmm. Yeah. And she got stiffed on her wages. They didn't pay her for a while. It eventually they did, but before that was happening, she called me. She wanted to know, how to go about collecting for wage theft. And I told her about the union, and she had never heard of the union. How is it that somebody who's in the field hasn't heard of the union yet?
Sure. Well, that's one of the biggest challenges to organizing a group of workers like this. It's a statewide program, and, of course, there is no sort of centralized workplace, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not like they're talking about things around a water cooler. So they're out in the homes working. Really, they have no access, to speak to their coworkers.
Uh-huh. Okay. So she could call that number, right?
Absolutely,
785-214-0068 and find out about the union. So if somebody like her is interested in joining the union, what do you do then? Do you get her to a vendor who recognizes the union or works with the union, or what do you do?
So it would depend on sort of what type of worker she is, whether she's in the Consumer Directed Services Program.
I see.
Then she would have the ability to take part in what we're doing right now. Or if she's in the in-home side, we, of course, would want to talk to her about that as well.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you, Julia in St.
Yeah.
Joe. I want to thank you very much for talking about your your work and the union, and I hope you get rid of that cough, too.
thank you.
We've been talking to Julia May, a home care worker, and I want to thank you, John Nelson, from the Home Care Union. Thanks so much for being on the Heartland Labor Forum.
Georgia, thank you.
And stay tuned for
thank
Safety
you.
First.
Working at this job is dirty and dangerous, and I'm taking risks anyway. Oh, if I had the time and the proper equipment, I could do my job safely each day. Everybody here says they're sticklers for safety, and I'm not here to say that they lie. I'm saying we just come to work here. We don't come to die.
Hello, this is Mary Ario for Safety First. 2 years after West Texas fertilizer plant explosion, are workers any safer? On April 17, 2013, a massive fire and explosion tore through the West Fertilizer Plant in West Texas, killing 15 people, including 10 volunteer firefighters, and injuring more than 200. Fueled by the 30 tons of explosive ammonium nitrate on site, the blast ripped through the wooden building and its flammable contents, destroying three nearby schools, a nursing home, and devastating 37 city blocks. A federal government investigation into the disaster found enormous gaps in information made available to first responders and the community about the plant's highly hazardous materials, information that could have prevented or reduced the loss of life, injuries, and damage. 2 years after this catastrophe, the Center for Effective Government has taken a look at the disclosure practices around such hazardous chemicals and found what's required of these facilities to still be inadequate and insufficient. The upshot are situations like West Texas, where first responders and plant neighbors have no advance information or plan in place in case of an emergency, when a delay can make an already dangerous situation even more serious. So has anything changed since the West Texas disaster? Greenpeace's legislative director Rick Hines' viewpoint, the Environmental Protection Agency is bringing foot dragging to an art form. Next, on Workers' Memorial Day 2015, an appeal to control toxic substances from www.publicintegrity.org for April 28th. 2 weeks ago, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reported that 4,585 people were killed on the job in this country in 2013. Experts say, however, that the death toll from occupational disease in the U.S. may be 10 or more times higher. For this reason, the International Trade Union Confederation, a Brussels-based organization that represents 176 million workers belonging to 328 national affiliates, such as the AFL-CIO in the U.S., decided that its theme for Workers' Memorial Day on April 28, 2015, would be removing exposures to hazardous substances in the workplace. In a new report, the Confederation cites what it calls a cautious estimate from the International Labor Organization that puts the annual death toll from workplace toxics at 651,000 worldwide. The ILO says there are 160 million new cases of occupational disease each year. The reality is workers have very little capacity today to track exposures in their career, said Annabella Rosenberg, the Confederation's Paris-based policy advisor for occupational health and safety and environment. The epidemic of work-related cancer and other diseases cries out for stricter regulation, says Rosenberg, and her counterpart at the AFL-CIO, Peg Seminario. We have very few standards to protect workers in the U.S., and those we have are 40 to 50 years old, and woefully out of date, Seminario said. Whether you're a worker with a personal story, a safety expert with a tip, or a company official making a workplace safer, they would like to hear from you. Go to www.publicintegrity.org, choose Environment and Workers' Memorial Day. Finally, breaking news, OSHA issues confined space rule for construction from ehstoday.com for May 1st. OSHA on May 1st issued a final rule to increase protections for construction workers in confined spaces. The rule will provide construction workers with protections similar to those in manufacturing and general industry workers. who have had them for two decades, with some differences tailored to the construction industry. These include requirements to ensure that multiple employers share vital safety information and to continuously monitor hazards. This rule will save lives of construction workers, says Assistant Secretary of Labor for OSHA, Dr. David Michaels. Unlike most general industry work sites, construction sites are continually evolving, with the number of and characteristics of confined spaces changing as work progresses. This rule emphasizes training, continuous worksite evaluation, and communication requirements. Manholes, crawl spaces, tanks, and other confined spaces are not intended for continuous occupancy and are also difficult to exit in an emergency. People working in confined spaces face life-threatening hazards, including toxic substances, electrocutions, explosions, and asphyxiation. Compliance assistant material and additional information is available on OSHA's Confined Space in Construction webpage. This is Mary Ario for Safety First.
And this is the Heartland Labor Forum calendar, May 7, 2015. Immigration Policy and Economics, Friday, May 8th at 7:30 a.m. Big Brothers and Sisters at 1709 Walnut, KCMO, ZIP 64108. Sponsored by the Latino Coalition. Capital Day of Action, Stand for Medicaid Expansion, May 13th, 9:30 a.m., return 7:30 p.m., Jeff City. For rides from Kansas City, call KC Jobs with Justice, 816-805-2385, or email Justin Stein, Justin at mojwj.org. Help save our Public Postal Service rally, May 14th, 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. USPS Plant and Distribution Center at 1700 Cleveland Avenue, KCMO 64127. Support home care health workers. Deliver message to the governor, May 19th through the 20th. Governor's Mansion, Jeff City. Contact Jobs with Justice at 816-805 2385. And 2015 Magic Camp Mentoring a Girl in Construction for High School Girls, June 1st through the 5th, Builders Association Training Center, 105 West 12th Street, North Kansas City, Missouri 64116. Sponsored by the National Association of Women in Construction and KC Construction Industry. Call 816-564-3589 or go to kcnawic.org. And that's the calendar for today.
And you can find the calendar on our webpage along with archived shows and future shows at heartlandlaborforum.org. Tune in next week to the Heartland Labor Forum. The show is called Teacher Wars, the Most Embattled Profession. And thanks to tonight's engineer, Jen Zaman. You have been listening to the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. We are sponsored by the Institute for Labor Studies at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Our volunteers come from a wide variety of workplaces and unions. We are supported by many Kansas City area unions and the AFL-CIO. To talk back to us, to volunteer, or to let us know about news or events, call us at 816-235-1470 or go to www.heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI, UMKC, or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening to the Heartland Labor Forum at 6 o'clock or to our Friday morning rebroadcast at 5 o'clock right here on 90.1 FM KKFI.